Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name's Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean.
Welcome to Film Colossus.
Your fast and, quite frankly, furious guide to movies.
You, the one with that smile, yeah. Come over here for a while. Hey girl, do you hear what I'm saying? I don't have time to be waiting all day. Just believe that it's not all so wrong.
I like what you did there.
Yeah, I've been trying to incorporate fast stuff and furious stuff more into my life a little bit day by day, Chris.
Just in general.
Yeah, you know, like sometimes when I need to go up the stairs, I'll sprint up the stairs. Or if I need to chop some vegetables, I will just go crazy and just start flailing that knife everywhere.
The things you do when you have a one-year-old in the house.
Yeah, I would never do this around my one-year-old. I have lost a couple fingers, though.
Ah, that's a shame. That's a shame. But, yeah. You know, when you're living that life, you're living that life.
Yeah. And as far as I can tell, at least from my firsthand experience now, losing fingers does not disable me from driving cars. So I'm good there.
Oh, yeah. You're still shifting.
Yeah.
You're still.
I think even if I was just down to like two nubby hands, I could still turn that wheel.
I know you could.
Yeah. I think I might have a shot at getting in these movies if I bring that kind of character to them.
Yeah. You know, you would be definitely scary would be the word in terms of just like your dedication to the franchise.
Uh-huh.
They'd be like, you've been living your life. How?
Yeah.
And it's resulted in what?
Although it could disqualify me. Because I wouldn't be able to hold a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, okay. Can we talk about that real fast?
I wanted to give us a lead into the first movie.
Okay. So they use walkie-talkies. Are the walkie-talkies present in the first three movies?
It's honestly, I don't know. The whole walkie-talkie storyline in the Fast and Furious movies has been well documented, but it's hard to keep track of like when they go and when they come. I got to say, though, it's honestly one of my favorite parts of the movies that, like, sometimes they have walkie-talkies in situations where they're definitely not helpful. And sometimes they just, like, whisper and people hear them.
I know. They do a lot of, like, exposition through just, like, driving in the car, be like, move to the left, move to the left. And you just see, like, the other person be like, oh, yeah, I'm a great driver and I know exactly what you're thinking because we're that family oriented.
Absolutely. You're describing what's so great about these movies.
The walkie-talkie thing kind of infuriates me.
I get it.
Much to your shock and dismay, I know. In just the sense that it's so impractical.
Oh yeah. And totally.
These people are pulling off high speed motor vehicle missions. Crime. I was gonna say crimes, but it's not always crimes.
They also have an incredibly technologically advanced member on their team who can get them the kind of equipment like headsets and stuff that does not require using your hands.
Yeah, I like at what point when you're driving and all the cars are stick shift,
right?
Are you picking up the walkie-talkie and being able to just be like, all right, we're gonna do this now? Like, do you have to shift? Like, don't you're in high-speed chases, people are shooting at you. You're driving all wildly. You need to shift. You need both hands. I'm sorry you're not using your walkie-talkie.
Yeah. You're describing what's so great about these movies.
That's one way of looking at it. So last episode, we talked about the first three movies in the franchise.
Yep.
And generally, like, I liked 3 out of 3. You liked 2 out of 3.
Well, no, I, for the record, I like every Fast and Furious movie. I just think Tokyo Drift, I don't even think it's fair to like count it in the universe. It's almost like Solo, a Star Wars story. Like, it's like, it's there. Like, we all recognize that it's like tangential, but it's not really part of the franchise. Like, it was a fun excursion. We gave Lucas Black a shot at becoming a movie star. It didn't quite work out. And like, you know, we're not mad that it's there, but, we just accept that it's the weird cousin you see sometimes at the family reunion, you know?
I would describe that as not liking it. If you're
he's a nice guy, you know, he always brings like mac and cheese, which is dope, but like, I'm not gonna go talk to him. Like, what would we have to talk about?
I would describe that as not liking.
No, he's nice. He, again, the mac and cheese.
Yeah, you like the mac and cheese. The person, the movie, yeah.
Like, it's just like, it's not a bad movie. That's what I want to say. It's like, yeah. I just don't, it's saying like it that I like 2 out of 3. I like 2 out of 2.
I think that it's just proving, it's semantically proving my points. So now we come to Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious. That's it.
That's it. No "thes" in it. It's just somebody was looking at the title for this movie and said, you know what we need to do? Minimalism.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious.
I don't even want the word "and." I want an ampersand.
Yeah. They really changed it up. Was it marketing? Bold. Was it whose idea? Okay. So if I got to interview somebody from the franchise, one of the people that have been there from the get-go, you know?
Yeah.
I think the thing that I would want to ask them, I guess this would be Neil Moritz, you know, I'm talking to Neil, or I'm talking to Vin, right, or Michael Fodtrell, and I'm saying, why did you title things differently every single time?
Every single time. None of these titles are even close. They're really not alike at all, other than like Fast or Furious being used. Other than that, it's a free-for-all, and I love it.
Yeah, it's just completely different. Like, even Fast X, there's no other just Fast. Oh, Fast 5. Oh. But yeah. Fast 5 is like 5. It's not Fast 10. It's Fast X.
F9 doesn't use any words.
No, it's just a gigantic tornado, you know? It's off the scale.
What are these days, like, just a symbol they make up is going to be the name of the movie?
You know, it is a shame that F9 did not feature the largest tornado in the history of the world.
Is that... I don't know that reference.
Oh, the Fujita scale, I think it is. Or is it the Fujita scale?
Well, there could be a crossover between Fast and Furious and the Hurricane Heist, so maybe they will do that.
Yeah, Fujita scale. Okay, so the Fujita scale, it starts at F0.
Off to a great start, by the way.
Yeah, right. Goes F0, F1, F2, F3, F4, F5. And okay. F5 is the height of the scale for an incredible like tornado that has speeds of 261 to 318 miles per hour.
Wow, which would cause like a polar vortex or something. Like, it would just end the world.
Yeah, so imagine an F9.
Yeah, that's the kind of enemy these heroes face in these movies, though.
I would love... They're facing somebody that's just like, I'm going to create the world's most gigantic tornado on Antarctica. Come stop me. So it should have been a tornado rather than a submarine.
I don't know how often we're going to agree on this podcast, Chris, but you were right about that.
Thank you.
That should have been what they did, especially since I don't really like F9 that much.
It took a while to get there, but we got there.
Yeah.
So Fast and Furious, 2009 movie. I did not see this in theaters.
I did not either. This would have been after I've watched Fast 5, me going back through and watching the Fast and Furious movies again. Like I said in the last episode, I had seen the first two movies way back when they came out, had no impact on me at the time they came out because I was a young, dumb teenager who couldn't understand complex philosophies being illustrated in those movies. But now I do. Sure. And as I was going back through rewatching the movies after Fast Five, I remember watching Fast and Furious, I believe, in my hometown, my childhood home living room, and thinking it wasn't very good. That's all I really remember.
I just watched it for the first time 3 weeks ago, a month ago, and I also thought it was not very good.
It's one of the four you don't like.
And it's four, isn't it? Yeah, it's it was for a time the worst. Like, if we're talking the first four movies, I'd definitely rank it last of the first four.
I would rank it third. Well, I would rank it 3 out of 3.
Damn it. It's so I like the idea that we have Letty being killed. It brings Dom back. We have Dom kind of on this avenging mission. It recharacterizes him after he's been gone for two movies and introduces him a little bit more in this active, not the mysterious leader that he was in the Fast and the Furious, but as more of this action-oriented man on a mission. It gives him some sympathy. Like, I think it's a level up in terms of his character.
He's a wounded animal.
Yeah. Everything else, though, just kind of leaves me a little, even from the opening sequence. Mm-hmm. Like, watching the Fast and the Furious, even though the opening sequence is really kind of basic.
It's awesome. Yeah.
When you compare it to where the franchise goes from there.
Yeah.
There's something very grounded, stylish, cool about that first DVD player heist.
Absolutely.
That they do. And just like driving under the truck. It's very coordinated and realistic in some ways, which made it feel attainable but also dangerous, and I like that. In watching Fast and Furious in the intro to that, it's so bombastic and over the top and insane. Yeah. It just reads as cheesy to me.
Mm-hmm.
That from the get-go, the movie just kind of got off on the wrong foot to me.
Yeah, I actually totally get that. Justin Lin is one movie away from figuring this stuff out. Like, IMO, the action in this movie is better than Tokyo Drift, which I found very, like, plotting and, like, not very intense. Like, giving off the impression of intensity, but, like, never actually feeling that way. I think Fast and Furious gets closer by going more bombastic and going that more cartoon level that reaches like crazy levels in Fast Five and Fast and Furious Six and everything. So like, I just see it as a stepping stone to that. But I totally agree, if you're going to compare it to the Fast and the Furious, that Rob Cohen, he does have a certain like slick style about him, from just like the way the camera moves with the cars to, like you said, like just planning out the sequence itself, and like you're always in step with them, to the colors, to just like the swirling, like lighting, like there's just everything just so calculated and well done on a kind of basic level. Like you said, like it's just impressive in and of itself, that it's tough to compare it to anything else that happens in the franchise, because like you said, it goes so bombastic. But Fast and Furious is, the reason it pales in comparison to the Fast and the Furious is because it isn't as bombastic as it needs to be. It isn't as like slick as you'd like it to be. Like it's a little clunky, especially the scenes where they're driving through like the mountains and stuff, like the little tunnels in the mountains.
Yeah.
Like a lot of that stuff, I don't think it's bad. Like I definitely wouldn't. Here's where I'll go off on another trail. Is like, I agree from a pure technical standpoint that it kind of fails a little bit. That it's, if you just watch that scene on its own, it's not very exciting. But for me, as somebody who's very invested in the Fast and Furious franchise, who, you know, after you watch all these movies and you take all these characters in multiple times and you go back to a movie like this, I think the entire movie does a really great job of, by the way, this movie, it doesn't have a ton of action in it. Like, of all the Fast and Furious movies, it might have the least. Two of, like, maybe the four big action scenes are those goddamn tunnel scenes, which are just, like, not that well done. So it's not like there's a ton of action in it. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of drama. There's a lot of character dynamics at play. And I think all of that stuff is way more interesting than the action. And all of those dynamics are infused into the action, as well as all of the character dynamics from the rest of the movies. That's kind of the cool part of going to rewatch these movies, is you understand things a little more, and you there's like more weight to the action scenes. So in that sense, I think this movie does what it needs to do, that you're really into the characters and what journey they're on. And that helps me care more about the action scenes. But I do agree, from a technical standpoint, they just aren't as well done.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah, I just yesterday went to the theater and watched three movies in the theater. I watched Casino Royale, You Hurt My Feelings, and Cloverfield.
Yeah.
And You Hurt My Feelings is just like a Sundance darling, have four like interesting actors have problems in New York City. So yeah. Very different. But Casino Royale and Cloverfield, I think, do exactly what Fast and Furious fails to. And it's something that I harped on. I don't know if I talked about it as much in the previous episode, but when I was ranking the movies in terms of the action and micro narratives, and just having some kind of smaller micro narrative being part of the action sequences to give them a little bit of vitality and life and through line.
Right.
Rather than just being like the tunnel scenes, an empty stretch of just like driving through the tunnel, like kind of bashing each other, and then yeah. Making it like it's so A to B with a lot of the action sequences in Fast and Furious. And I thought that was some of the problem with Tokyo Drift as well. Like, not always, but especially in the last drag race, drift race.
Yeah, get it right.
Watching Casino Royale was just such a breath of fresh air of just, oh, this is exactly how you use micro narratives in action sequences and structure like a blockbuster movie that has these stretches in it. And I do think Fast and Furious manages to get there at times, but it's like you needed Fast and Furious as kind of, as you're saying, or as you kind of hinted at, a larval stage of reinventing the franchise after Tokyo Drift and getting it back on track with Brian and Mia and Dom and saying like, hey, this is who we're building this universe around. This is the new tone of this universe. Like, let's get to it. So it's doing important work in reestablishing the franchise. So I admire it for that. I just found a lot of the rehashing of like Brian trying to win Dom over again is kind of repetitious. And then Brian trying to win Mia over again. It's like a bad Fast and Furious remake. Brian's even like working as a cop again and then like sides with Dom again.
This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. When life gets busy, you grind, you push, you reach for a stick of Liquid IV powder. It hydrates you 2 times faster than water alone, so you can crush goals and your to-do list. Because real life is extreme enough. Real people, real flavor, real hydrating. Buy a stick in store or at liquidiv.com with the code podcast for 20% off your order.
I know what you mean, but I don't really agree. I feel like there's a different energy this time because
there is.
I mean, A, they know Brian is a cop. Like, they know what he's doing, which allows what I think is the main theme of the movie to really hit. Like, what is an outlaw? Like, who is a bad guy? Because, you know, Brian is a good guy, in quotes, because he works for the cops, and Dom is a bad guy, in quotes. Yet, they're both infiltrating Braga's crime circle for honorable, good reasons. Like, Dom isn't doing anything bad. He's doing something in service and justice of one of his family members. And that's a key part of Brian's journey as he is coming back into this family's fold and observing that and wondering about himself and like where he fits and like what, how is he a good guy? Like where can he do the most good? And that energy is infused to him and Dom's relationship, him and Mia's relationship. Like that is a completely different dynamic than the first movie. And I think it's played really, really well in this movie. Like, you got 3 actors there that, like, they're just hitting their marks, in my opinion, in this movie. Like, the conversations they have, the weight you feel between them, like, it's all hitting to me in a way that, again, I find way more interesting than the action in this movie. Like, there's not a lot of action in it. So, like, I'm kind of there just to watch almost like a stage play, it feels like sometimes. And I find it riveting.
I like the ideas as you're presenting them. It's just I found the, as it was unfolding, a little too like beat by beat of the first movie. Maybe if I rewatch it like a second time, I would find more to kind of admire in that way, especially having the context of the series now. But at least on that first watch, I was just like a little bored by a lot of it because I was like, all right, he's going to win Mia back. He's going to win Dom back. Like,
I get that. Because the Fast and the Furious, like if we're comparing those two movies, that movie's really out of control. Like the aesthetic matches what's going on. Like all these people are like desperate to make their mark and like find their way. And Brian's trying to figure out what he wants. Like there's a manicness to it that is driving all of those dynamics. Where this movie, it's a little static. Like it's a lot of like stopping and talking and thinking. And it, and a lot of like, you know, big, like, dramatic stares and speeches. Like, a lot of that's going on that I could see getting a little bored by that. But again, I'm fully invested and ready for all of it.
Sorry, somebody's about to... Package is about to be dropped off.
Oh, that's
so I
okay.
Don't want Archer to bark.
By the way, they should bring a dog into this franchise. And it a dog is... should drive a car.
It is really missing a dog in the franchise.
Like John Cena should have had a dog or something.
How nice would that have been? I guess it would be a complicating factor for all the high speed chases, but it works in John Wick. He has a dog.
But the dog would never die. Like this dog would constantly narrowly miss death and in fact help these heroes achieve their mission.
I'm just imagining, yeah, if the dog's driving the car, it just has like a little helmet on and they found a way to channel its brain waves into cars. I mean, we're getting there with like Fast 11 Absolutely. Or Fast 12. It could happen.
If Ramsey can drive a car, a dog can.
What?
Yeah, she had never driven before.
Oh, she had never driven a car before?
Well, she didn't have a license.
Yeah, okay. But
but a dog doesn't have a license.
She has opposable thumbs. Like,
well, we don't know how far in the future we're going to go with these movies, so dogs may have them by then.
Well, that is very true. So Fast and Furious. Okay. Fast Five.
Fast Five. Now, I mean, Chris, we have to ready ourselves for talking about Fast Five.
This is your baby.
This is the one. Like this, I know I've said it a few times on the show, but I really mean this. It's a perfect movie.
That's good that you feel that way.
It's beyond, when I say perfect, like truly I might love the Fast and the Furious the most. Like I feel a kinship with that movie. I just adore the way it looks and how those characters are in that movie so much that it's probably always going to be my favorite. But Fast Five, on a like philosophical level, on just like, for me as a movie lover, as somebody who writes about movies for a living, talks about movies and like loves movies, to me this is doing exactly what I want movies to do in a way that like, this is my other pick for favorite. Like, it's not my personal pick, but it's like, it's almost closest to me in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I just described when I was ranking Casino Royale that it's kind of it's not my favorite movie of all time by any means. I don't even think it's in my top 10 of all time, but there's something about it that it's kind of like the blueprint to me for how I want like a blockbustery franchisey movie to be.
Right.
And I feel like that's you with Fast Five.
It 100% is.
It's kind of like the blueprints doing, like hitting all the things that you want, like this kind of movie to hit.
Absolutely. Yes.
I remember seeing this in theaters and being very blown away by it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that it had a little bit more of the micro narrative with the safes. And had that spectacle and that set piece to it. It felt very impressive. On the rewatch, it felt kind of like small to me in ways.
Oh yeah, I know. It's such a weird feeling to think like the safe scene, yeah, feels small.
Yeah, it's especially with where the franchise goes, of course, but I think just where cinema has gone since then.
Totally.
As well, like action movies, blockbuster movies, like the safe scene as a set piece is this great idea, but it's a little bit more of a narrow concept than the places that some movies have gone in recent years.
Yeah. We're in a post Thanos world now. Like you really got to up your game.
Yeah. There's so much that gets done though. Like the practical effects wise, which I don't know how much of that was practical. Like I don't think they drove like giant safes and through a bank things. Yeah. But it felt kind of like grounded and practical in a way that Thanos, like Avengers,
yes,
doesn't.
It's one of my absolute favorite things about these movies is, yeah, stuff like that obviously requires CGI, but they kind of, the filmmakers of these movies always seem to pride themselves on a lot of the only CGI done is like erasing wires and stuff, you know, like there's a lot of practical stunts.
Yeah. It felt like, especially I really like Fast X. So this isn't a dig on Fast X, but the bomb rolling through Rome in Fast X was very CGI clearly, totally. And a little cartoonish, where this felt a little more grounded, a little more practical. It was a nice kind of return to some of the practical aspects of 1 and 2 that I liked so much. So it gets a lot of praise for me from that. The team dynamic getting introduced again and really building out that you have this family of characters that goes beyond Dom, Brian, and Mia was cool as well. Like getting to bring Roman back, really establishing Tej in a way that the second movie like introduced him but didn't really develop him.
They gave him nothing in that movie.
Yeah, like to where you're like, oh yeah, they brought him back. And then introducing Gal Gadot, I completely forgot she was in these movies.
Oh yeah.
So that was nice to see. So there is like a lot of the important framework stuff going on. It's just I couldn't help but think on rewatch how more of like in the incubator this was, or how it was almost like a thesis statement of what the franchise could be rather than like the big final version of where it would go.
Yeah. It's definitely, you're right. Like it's a blueprint movie in the way that it kind of just sets up what these movies will now be, like what kind of aesthetic you can expect, like the way the sequences are going to go, the way characters are going to talk to each other, the way characters can go between good guys and bad guys, like so fluidly. Like there's a lot of that going on. But it does even feel small compared to like Fast and Furious 6, the next movie, where the action sequences are bigger. And in my opinion, the philosophy like deepens. Like every movie feels like it establishes what Fast 5 set up a little bit more and more. But Fast 5 is the one that, you're right, it's the thesis statement. Like it is the one that says like, this is what movies can do. And in my opinion, like, again, I love this movie. This movie is perfect to me and is doing exactly what I want movies to do. And the mantra of this movie is whatever needs to be done in service of these characters will be done. Like, we don't care if it makes sense. We don't care if it's possible. Like, we know they're not superheroes, but we're just going to go ahead and pretend they are superheroes. Like, it makes me think of Fast and Furious. In that scene where Dom is like perfectly timing to drive under like the oil tanker as it rolls down the road. Like,
yeah.
And that movie, like, it's cool. Like, again, those are the baby steps, like them setting up dynamic. But like, it doesn't feel real. Like, it doesn't feel part of that movie. It doesn't feel established and believable like it does in Fast Five. Like, just from the get-go, the way these characters are behaving and maneuvering and talking, like, you believe them. You really believe these people can do everything they say they're going to do, and then they do it. I just find it moving. It's just like probably a weird thing to say, but like I find it truly moving to see a movie committing to a style that much, and all in service of people, of making these characters more relatable, of getting us invested in what they're doing. Like, to me, that's what movies are all about.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Fast and Furious as kind of resetting things. I do think it was wiping the slate clean. It's like a palate cleanser of, like, let's get back on track.
Drift.
Yeah, of Tokyo Drift. And then Fast 5, is the rebirth. Like, hey, here we are. Like, us is this. This is who is in this franchise moving forward. This is what we do moving forward. Are you with it? And I remember liking it back in the day. I liked it this time as well. Like, it's still kind of a standout in terms of just being like a good stylistic, unique in its tone and characters action movie. It's not like you can't make Fast and Furious, but you look at the movies around it and the movies that have been made, and Fast and Furious still kind of stands out and has a place in the action blockbuster zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Or Fast 5 does, sorry.
Yeah, Fast 5. I feel like I must have seen it in theaters. I feel like I did, because they covered it on How Did This Get Made way back when, and there was already like some hype surrounding this movie and how crazy it was, so I'm sure I went to the theaters to see it with the people I still to this day watch the Fast and Furious movies with. But And as much as I've always really enjoyed this movie, every time I've watched it, every single time I've watched it, I've liked it a little bit more and more. Till we've gotten to like the point we're at now where I'm like, it's my mission statement. Like, it's everything. including this last time, because my wife and I were going through watching the movies again, getting ready for Fast X. And I had some friends come over one day and I suggested, like, hey, let's watch Fast Five. Like, it's the next movie on our list. Like, it's a super awesome movie. Anybody would enjoy this movie. And we started watching it, and there's a lot wrapped up in this, but I'll try to cover it as efficiently as I can. There was a lot of like questions about the movie. Like, wait, how did they do this? Like, why did that happen? Like, how is this possible? which, you know, I guess if you're not ready for like what these movies are doing, it is what it is. And I found it frustrating because, so first of all, before I get into that, I think part of the reason part of the reason I love these movies is because I love watching them with people. I've always really enjoyed watching movies with a group of people who have a mutual understanding of what the movie is doing and like having fun with movies and not necessarily berating a movie, but like not really criticizing a movie, but like maybe criticizing it in a fun way. Like, to me, it's fun to talk about how ridiculous these movies are. I don't get angry that they're driving these safes through the bank walls and probably killing hundreds of people. Like, I just note that that is happening and think it's kind of funny that like that is so ridiculous that they thought they could get away with this. But to then watch the movie with people who are really critiquing it and really annoyed about it and really angry about it, like, it really again cemented why I love this movie and this franchise. That in my mind, like, real world logic, like that kind of stuff has no place in a movie. Like, it doesn't matter to a movie like this. It has no part in the emotional stakes and the character journeys. When I think about my favorite movies, I don't think about them logically making sense. I think about like why I connect with them, like why they make me feel a certain way. And that to me is like, that's how I consume this movie. To me, it's a painting with its own environment. Like, it makes its own rules. It's not beholden to anything. It's just writing its own rule book in a way that like I find so fascinating. And in a way that I think a lot of people just aren't ready for. Like, people are very satisfied when a movie is following the rules and traditional in a lot of ways. And I love when shit's atraditional.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Yes, you do. This is something that we've talked about a lot over the 12 years we've been working together. And I think what you just said in there helped me understand your mindset on this more than anything else that we've ever talked about.
I've tried so many times to explain myself.
I know. When you said that it's like a painting to you and thinking about it that way in terms of the logic, because of course there are people that saw like a Picasso painting where like, you don't paint faces like that. That's not what a face looks like. And you're just like, shut up. It's an interpretation of a face. It's carrying this emotion. And what are you feeling when you look at a face that's presented that way? Or what are you looking at with a Modigliani when the bodies are made to look the way that they look, or any like cubism, impressionism, anything that's not hyper realistic.
Right.
What are you taking away from that style and the way in which it morphs reality and breaks logic to get at something else? And that's not typically how I've thought of movies.
Yes. Most people, I would say, don't.
Yes. Because there is such a... In narrative, cause and effect is so important. There's no, like, plot hole in a painting, right?
Right.
Because the logic is just... It's there. Like, it's this visual...
It just is.
...thing. So... The moment that you start to look at movies as narrative more so than as like experience or impression, yes, or feeling, I think all the logic criticisms come in and are valid and make sense why people would feel that way. But film is also visual. It's clearly a very important visual medium. And if you lean more towards the visual painting response in the way that you would to visual art aspect of it, everything that you've ever said about movies makes so much more sense to me.
And in my mind, it's not even that like narrative doesn't matter.
Right.
Maybe in some ways it doesn't to me, but I almost feel like it, I feel like the conversation is something beyond that. Like, this movies allow for a different thread of narrative. It allows us to reinvent the way we even think about narrative. Like, because in my mind, a movie can have disruptive logic that ruins the experience, in the sense that, like, if you set up certain rules and you break them, like, that, it pulls you out of the reality of what they've presented. If you do something illogical in the sense that it hurts one of your themes or makes one of your themes not make sense or makes one of your character's motivations not make sense anymore, like, that's a problem. Like, that takes me out of it. But in terms of everything you're saying, that like narratives have always existed in a certain way in literary terms, and there are certain rules for structure and certain logic must be, real world logic must be followed. Like, all of that stuff to me, like, that's basic. I hate to put it that way, but like, we're not allowing movies to reach what they're truly capable of if we're putting those parameters around them.
And I think there's a middle ground between what you were saying does bother you about like the ways in which narrative can matter to you with things like breaking in character, breaking like the world building that's gone on, and what you're just saying about like the foundational or like narrative should do this. There's often kind of an overlap to me. Like Fast Five, I have no issues with Hobbs, right? Mm-hmm. He comes in, he's a little more like cartoony than everyone else, but it's not... necessarily like outrageous in a way.
He reminds me of like the rooster sheriff in the Looney Tunes cartoons.
Yeah, he like just so over the top. But by the time we're like in the later movies, was it 7 or 8?
Yeah.
Some of the scenes with him are so like tonally different to me than the rest of the movie or rest of the what's going on with everyone else, that it starts to feel like a clash to
sure.
me. But in Fast Five, yeah, there's definitely ridiculous aspects to it. Like, but the impression, like the painting style that you're talking about makes sense. Like the Elena, his relationship with Elena moves maybe a little too quick for me, or is a little too like undercooked for me.
Sure.
And then The Rock still, I remember in 2011 being like, wow, Rock did such a great job. And now like 2023 being like, he was definitely the weakest person in the.
In Fast Five?
Yeah, in Fast Five.
He's great. No.
I think he's the Gina Carano of Fast Five.
Oh my gosh. What an insult.
So Fast Six?
Yeah, Fast and Furious Six, which... It's funny. I was thinking about this movie today. I love this movie so much. It's awesome. It ups the ante in a lot of ways. Like, the action's better, the philosophy's deeper. But I don't think it's better than Fast Five, and you kind of alluded to it. Whereas as the movies go on, there tends to be more of like a disparate energy going on throughout. Like, certain groups have their certain dynamics, and like, we shift between like rollicking cowboy cop to like the Joker crew making jokes to Dom and Brian talking about family. Like, there's a lot of different tones at play. And Fast and Furious 6 like is a stepping stone to like, oh, that happening a lot more. But Fast 5 isn't really that, not at all, but it kind of has like one general tone that meshes really well between everybody. Like, it feels like there's one core of the movie that everything's revolving around, in a way that the rest of the movies don't match. And I think because of that, like, that's why I like it a little more than Fast and Furious 6.
I get that. I view Fast and Furious 6 as like a nice middle ground between the two. Everybody does feel still part of a whole, like we got in Fast 5, but they're able to have a little bit more screen time. Like, I think that was one of the things in Fast 5 that I was a little disappointed in. I was like, oh, we get the group back together, but the group doesn't really have as much to do as Dom and Brian, which makes sense. It's their first kind of movie all reassembled, so you're giving them some stuff to do, but it felt like the roles were a little boxed in just a bit. Where I like in six that everybody has a lot more to do.
It's
so
true.
We're getting to see more of the group kind of flourish together and work together.
Yeah,
but it's still of a whole, where I feel like in future movies everybody's kind of broken out a little bit more.
Yeah, they are.
Like, they discovered in this one the dynamics that they liked and just kind of doubled down on it a lot. So it was very fresh to me in this one. And then as we get into 7, 8, 9, it feels kind of stale to me in some ways, with how it goes. So like, this to me is kind of like the perfect level up to 5 and is giving me a lot of the breakout that I wanted from 5. You know, me with scope and scale. Without tipping too far into the like silliness that we get in 7, 8, and 9.
I totally agree with all that. Like, it's definitely branching 5 out a little bit in a way that doesn't feel ridiculously out of control. It probably just speaks more to like what you and I want from movies. Like, I totally dig all that stuff and love watching this movie. But I do like the core dynamic. But you know, this movie has that. It really does. Even though all the sprawling adventures are going on, which for the record are all incredible. Like, when Roman and Han chase that guy and like get beat up by the guy who like knows how to actually fight. Like, that shit's great. Even when like Tej and Hobbs go to buy a car, like, that scene's great. Like, they're all hitting their marks. They're doing good work. But still, there is a core to this movie, and that they are trying to save Letty. Like, they are there for Dom. It's an incredible thing, because truly, Roman, Tej, Brian, all them, like, they're there to get pardons, sure. And yeah, they're kind of tasked of saving the world, but like, those all feel tangential to saving Letty. Like, they're there to help Dom. Like, that is the core of the movie. That informs the emotion, the aesthetic, like, what is driving everything going on within the movie. And I just can't think of another movie that's able to pull this kind of thing off that well. Like, all these people show up for this because, like, family is so important to them, because this woman they've never met is so important to this man that, like, they adore, that they follow, that they feel loyalty to. It's ridiculous on paper, yet it works so well in the movie in a way that I'm just, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
When I think it shows the trust and the faith that the group has, like the goodwill, to where It's like, yeah, we did this huge thing together in the previous movie. Like, we're in it. You're telling us you need us for this thing. There's benefits to us, but like, we care and we're going to have your back. And establishing that faith and that trust, I think, is such a crucial element to saying, like, this group is united and really making you buy in. By the time we're in, like, that big sequence at the end, and I do think that this is a movie, I don't think it's on the level of Casino Royale in terms of micro narratives, or like Pirates of the Caribbean in terms of micro narratives, but I think this is the best the franchise has ever been when it comes to really understanding, having the through lines of like a beginning, middle, and end in the action sequences and the set pieces. And it makes all the action in this movie just like hits in a way that it hadn't in 3, 4, and 5. Five, it's getting there. Like, mm-hmm. there's still some great moments going on, but it's such, I feel like 5, it's kind of like a nice ensemble or like a band playing, where like this gets up to the orchestra level, mm-hmm. of,
I get that.
We have all this stuff going on, but to have that emotional core of like Letty, like just compare this to Fast and Furious, where Dom's on his revenge mission because he thinks Letty's dead, compared to this in the way in which we have the human element playing out through the story with the narrative of the action sequences going on. It dovetails so well together and plays off of each other so well that the story and action are so infused in a way that with the fourth one, you kind of have to like pull them together. And this one, that's just working perfectly.
Yes, it's seamless. It's incredible just how effortless it all feels. Like every decision they're starting to make in these franchises, from like characters never die. Whenever you see a character die, that doesn't mean they're dead. Like it just like the cartoonishly evil things Shaw does, like running over people with his tank, like just murdering rampantly. All of these decisions they make again, it's all due to what Fast Five set up, that there are no rules, that you can have characters do whatever you want for the sake of like advancing the message and whatever reason you need to give to have them convert over to the other side or be alive, like so be it, as long as it fits in with the message and like what it's doing. I just think like this movie is another case in point of how well they handle all of that and how easily all those pieces maneuver and form a cohesive whole. Like I just think there's not ever a step in this movie that feels fake or unwarranted. Well, you know, there are moments like that I think happen in like Furious 7 or F9, where I'm like, I don't quite believe that. But like in this movie, the most ridiculous things ever happen. And like, it feels honest. It feels earned. It feels like it's part of what this movie has been setting up. And it feels climactic and important to the emotional journeys going on. Like, it's just amazing to pull something like that off.
Well, you look at just the difference in quality of how they set up Letty's, like, she survived, to Hans, he survived.
Yeah.
Where with Letty, they kind of like show what happened.
They show it.
They make it clear. With Han, they're just like, oh, you know, Mr. Nobody with his magic. You're like, okay, like, are you really?
I don't mind it, but I get that.
Are you insulting me like that?
I don't feel insulted. I'm just happy Han's back.
Yeah, I like Han being back. It was just,
although I gotta say that whole moment where they're like, let's show why Letty's alive, like they show the guy shooting the gun and he like pointedly he's got the gun aimed at her head, and then like with an evil sneer is like, I'm gonna shoot the gas tank instead, like this calculated decision to like carefully move his gun like 3 inches to the left. Like the camera's noting like, hey, look, he's pointing his gun somewhere else. This is a really good idea to shoot the gas tank. And like she goes flying, like wouldn't he see her fly off? It's silly.
It is dumb.
You don't feel insulted by that?
It has at least like a little bit more of a sure to it. Like if I can just say sure,
Sure.
Most times I'm okay with it. As like ridiculous as it is, like, sure. Like in Fast X, when they drop Dom's car from the helicopter onto the road, 99.99% of the time, the car just, explodes or flips or, like, something.
Smashes into 15 pieces.
Yeah, but could it land? Like, is there, in my, like, basic, I'm a kid playing with, like, toys.
Which is the way you should think when you're watching these movies.
Can I see, like, a car landing from a helicopter? Sure. But with, like, Han just being like, oh, Mr. Nobody's magic, I'm not, like, sure. I'm just, like, stupid.
What are you talking about? They show a shot of him in the car, then a shot of him not being in the car. That's all I need.
Within, like, they just pan for, because it was, like, 3 seconds that the car is upside down before it explodes. It was that way in Tokyo Drift. It was that way when they showed it, like, 3 more times.
I find that to be a creative decision that, we're talking about future movies again, but I find that to be a creative decision where, like, who knows if Han's ever even in that car? Like, it's not like we're seeing it in real time, Han being in the car and not being in the car. In my mind, like, it's, they give off the perception that Han's in trouble, but he never was in trouble.
He was clearly in the car. He was driving it from the whole part in Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, but Tokyo Drift doesn't really count.
There we go. There we go. So six, I like Luke Evans in this too.
Fuck,
like,
yeah.
I feel like Luke Evans really has the best villain energy since the dude in number two.
And
they give him, like, a little bit more time, a little bigger of an introduction. He's not just some random figurehead in the background. That opening, like, we meet him as he takes out, like, all the agency forces and everything and drives around and outsmarts everybody. I guess we meet him in the we meet his brother in the hospital in the next one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that opening scene with Owen, I think, is really cool. And the fact that he has a little bit of characterization in terms of all about precision, and he likes to switch out parts until it's perfect, which goes against the family dynamic of loyalty and investing in people.
Absolutely. He's the antithesis.
Yeah. So you have this really nice dynamic going on. It's maybe, like, roughly, like, a little rough, but it's at least there. And
it's definitely
rough
because it's, like, it's so obvious. Like, everybody just wears what they believe on their sleeves.
Yeah, like, and he's saying that out to people. It'd be different if they just showed him
switching
out. But, yeah. I didn't see the twist coming with Gina Carano.
How could you have seen that coming?
I just, when it happened, I was just like, oh!
It's ridiculous. Okay. Like, her and Lady had a giant fight. Like, she should just stop in the middle and be like, hey, I'm on your side.
Yeah, right. Like, there's no reason for me to beat the hell out of you.
Yeah, I love
it. It's, I liked that. It's the first, like, genuinely surprising moment I had in all of those movies. The only thing I disliked was when Gal Gadot, Giselle, goes flying off the car, like, sacrifices herself.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it, they're not like, hey, let's go get her body.
It's a weird part of these movies is, like, is somebody not obtaining bodies? Like, where was Michelle Rodriguez?
Yeah. At what point was Brian like, oh, yeah, it's her because I saw her body? It's like, well, no, there was no. Was there a body? Was it a fake body? Did they leave like a, did she leave a burned body? Whose body did she
imagine leave? If, like, the world was like this, there would just be bodies everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, if someone dies, like, just leave it there.
So that's one of the things that just bother me.
I don't mind it even a little bit.
Bother me just somewhat, which was nice in Cloverfield. A few, like, characters die, or the brother dies at one point in Cloverfield. And you have the brother's girlfriend and the main guy whose brother it was. Eventually, like, grieving over it and just being like, oh my god, Jason's dead, and, like, hugging each other and having, like, a moment. It's just, like, a minute in the movie, but giving them at least time to acknowledge that grief
Yeah.
was something that I was happy that movie did, because I feel like recently in some movies I've been watching, and really in the Fast and Furious franchise, there's not a lot of acknowledgement of like collateral damage or death toll, or even when like people they know and like die, you don't see like a big, you get a little bit of it with like Han's funeral and them being like, no more funerals. But then with like Gal Gadot, they're just kind of like, oh, Giselle didn't make it. Okay. Should we go look? Maybe she survived. And they're like, nah, she couldn't have.
Yeah. This gets back to what I said about Fast Five, though. Like, that's not of this movie. Like, that's not important. Like, that is something a movie could do, but that is not what these movies do. And in my mind, that is not, it doesn't inhibit the story. It doesn't inhibit the emotional stakes. It's just, it's a decision. It's the tenor and tone of these movies. It's the dramatic weight there at the end of Fast and Furious 6 when they're standing there looking out at just the debris on the runway, like this kind of communal acknowledgement of like what happened. There's no need for like a moment for Han breaks down and like everyone comforts him. Like that is something movies can do, but that's just not what the Fast movies do.
I guess the thing that feels a little incongruous to me about that is that if we're supposed to buy into the family dynamic and the loyalty and how much they care about each other, and that's supposed to drive like the core of this group, then not having the natural human reactions to loss.
You're talking about, I completely disagree. Like you're talking about something that would happen to somebody in real life in that moment. Like that's not what I need from a movie. Like I don't need that to happen to believe it.
But then how are we supposed to buy into the, like, we all care about each other and this is a family dynamic,
because
in those moments?
In every...
Doesn't it make it feel a little hollow if in the times where there's loss, they don't care about the loss?
You're saying they don't care. Like, the only reason you're saying they don't care is because they don't break down and cry.
Yeah, they barely acknowledge it even a little bit.
Gosh, Chris, you got to stop watching movies like this. Like, especially the Fast movies. Like, that's, if you're bringing that mentality into the movie, if you're expecting a natural human reaction like that, like something that would happen in that moment to a real human being in that actual situation, like, yeah, that probably would be disappointing to see all that.
Like, I mean, we have the juxtaposition between, as we're saying, like, Owen Shaw's like, oh, the perfect part's all that matters. Like, people are expendable, you just need to get the right one. If you're setting that up as like the antithesis and the negative energy and showing him not care about his people, then I want to see the group care about their people.
I don't understand why you think they don't care.
Because we don't see them care that Giselle dies.
They care the entire time. their entire communal relationship, like what they're all fighting for, like what mission they're on, like they're all there for the same thing. And I guess on some level I would assume that they understand death can happen in pursuit of something like that. Like I feel like what you're asking for is like, I mean,
normal?
I don't want to use no, I guess I used the word earlier, basic. Like that's not like, I guess I don't see how that would allow my connection to these people and my understanding of their mission and how they feel about each other, like, to elevate. I feel like you're just asking for a dramatic scene in a movie that's not really concerned with that kind of aesthetic.
It's not a dramatic scene. It's not needing like some big like breakdown.
It sounds like that's what you're saying, though.
No, I just need an acknowledgement of like them being like, oh, we lost Giselle. Like,
you need them to say the words, we lost Giselle.
Did I say I need them to say the words, we lost Giselle? Just something a little more serious than just going right back to like fun banter and having a barbecue being like, good one, guys. It's like, how
they do comfort Han.
How does that not read as like empty and hollow to you, that if we're saying like, oh, it's about family, then in this moment when you lose a family member,
especially
the reaction is just to kind of like
that final scene is about family and like what they're fighting for, like,
but they don't care about losing somebody.
That's it sounds like you're saying you want someone to say the words out loud, we lost Giselle, like we need to commemorate her, when really like the spirit of her and what she was a part of is there at the end of the movie. I don't, what you're asking it to do is like to be kind of boring.
Not having a human reaction to loss. See, is...
again, you're burdening this movie with like expectations of what we would think a movie would do in this situation. Like because... something. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Because it's telling me that it's about family and these people care about each other and like we're supposed to buy into that. I would expect it to demonstrate the family element.
I think it absolutely does.
How?
That whole last scene of the movie and everything they talk about, like their whole mantra and mission statement, Giselle is part of that.
But it sounds like a cult at that point of being like...
Kind of is.
As the cult lives, so you shall live. And any one person that passes...
That is how these movies function.
That to me is very like empty.
What? Empty? What way is it empty if it's the entire underpinning of these movies?
Because you have an opportunity to care about law. Look at how Dom reacted to Letty's death.
The way you say they don't
Fast
care
and Furious.
Just because I will not be able to wrap my mind around that.
Look how they treated Letty, like thinking Letty died in 4. And how big of a deal it was for Dom, like how he reacts to Elena's death.
But
in
that's
8.
The driving plot of the movie is getting Letty back. Like if there was a movie about avenging Giselle, like that energy probably would be infused into it.
If you were to tell Dom that Letty died at the end of like number 1 or something, you would expect some kind of like reaction to it. Or if they acknowledge that Brian, like that Paul Walker passed away, that Brian was gone, you would expect like something a little more. They went to Han's funeral and were like sad for Han. Like they have shown these things in the past, so when it's selective in terms of like Giselle,
in that moment they do comfort Han. Like Mia does realize what happens and she goes over to him and hugs him.
That's
but also
nice.
In that moment, they're wondering if Dom's going to walk out of the fire.
Yeah.
So there's a mix of energies going on.
Yeah. I think you're being too forgiving to like the spirit of.
I'm
like,
not being forgiving. I'm just going with. I'm just reading what the movie's doing and think it's doing it real fucking well.
Nah.
the aesthetic, the tone. The weight of these movies, it's to me, it's all calculated and done a very specific way. And what you're introducing, what you're asking it to do is not part of what it does.
I think that there's a way for it to do it that is absolutely, like, totally fine. Like, are you upset that
they could do that
as a funeral? Like,
No. I'm saying they could do all those things. I'm saying it's not necessary.
I think it is when you're establishing... Of
course you do. You want to breed in rules and expectations to these movies, and I don't want to do that.
You just said if the world building, you said at the beginning, if there's something that goes against like the world building or like the tone or
but
logic
I don't think this
things,
goes against the tone.
I'm saying it does.
Well, I'm saying you're wrong.
Family's supposed to matter, but the death of a family member doesn't.
It does matter. I never said it didn't matter.
Show me where in the like.
I've said it multiple times in that
last
scene.
Just because at the barbecue, they're like. Happy and talking about family?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, like the spirit of what they were fighting for like is infused into what they've accomplished and like the fact that they've gotten these pardons and they can go back home and they can exist as a family back where they agree. Like all of that, that's just part of the energy this entire group had throughout the entire movie, throughout the whole franchise. You're asking for something very, very specific for it to do.
I'm asking for them to not be distant about the loss of somebody. Like, how does that?
I guess I don't think it's
change
distant.
The spirit. It, not acknowledging it is not distant.
See, again, we're gonna do circles around that point. Not acknowledging it. What you're saying is a literal acknowledgement.
Because the movie does literally acknowledge everything else that's going on at times and points.
Our whole discussion about the painting is just out the window now.
Yeah.
I have no time for that kind of, like, I don't care if a movie has to or doesn't have to. Like, I only care if a movie does something well. Like, I don't need it to do something specific.
Yeah, to me, doing something well when you're establishing, like, family is important and not just interchangeable parts, is that if you lose, like, a part, then it's meaningful.
I feel the weight of her gone at the end of that moment. Also, I think maybe you're just misreading that moment in general where they're standing on the runway. Like, I feel it's very heavy at that moment. Like, you totally feel Han, the weight of Han losing the woman he loves.
I'll go back. I'll watch that. And then when we come back for the next episode, I'll let you know.
Can't wait. Cliffhanger.
Ha. Okay.
I mean, if you thought that was a lot of arguing, wait for the next episode.
Oh, man. Yeah, the next one, 7, 8, and 9 is going to be...
Three good movies.
Three horrendous...
You think all three of them are bad?
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, we're going to get into it.
All right. Until then.
Yeah, until then. Not a big question to ask. Anything? Do you want to do anything? Yeah. Baby, do a thing with me. It seems so good. Come on and do a thing with me. At Merrill West Credit Union, we're working towards a brighter financial future for both our members and our community, knowing that when you succeed, we all succeed. That starts with a solid financial foundation. As a credit union, we have no stockholders demanding profits. Our commitment is to our members. Experience the difference with our Money Market Max Bonus promotion, offering a cash incentive for letting us protect and grow your money. Merrill West Credit Union, working for you. Today, tomorrow, together. Merrill West Credit Union is insured by NCUA.